Our next item is the Federation in the world from the perspective of a civil rights advocate and blind leader in Australia. To present this item, we have Graham Innes, who is a lawyer, a mediator, a director of companies, a human rights practitioner for decades. Graham Innes has worked in equal opportunity efforts in New South Wales, Western Australia, and nationally. He was Deputy Disability Discrimination Commissioner with the Commonwealth Human Rights and Equal Opportunity Commission from 1999 to 2005. He has been a member of a great many entities, including the New South Wales Administrative Decisions Tribunal, the New South Wales Consumer Trader and Tenancy Tribunal, the Social Security Appeals Tribunal, and a good many others. He has two children, so he knows about the joys and trials of parenthood as well. He is a human rights and disability discrimination commissioner. Here is Graham Innes.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you, Dr. Mora, and good morning, Federationists, or should I say, g'day, mates. Australia is a long-standing ally of the USA, and it's been a privilege to be involved in your independence ceremony today. Thank you very much. I'd like to begin with a story. It's a story about a boy of seven who, with his parents and brother and sister, went to visit a family friend. Whilst not a relative, this friend was known as Uncle David. Uncle David was a fascinating man. He smoked a pipe, of interest because of the sounds and the smell. He told interesting stories in a deep, resonant voice, and he was a politician. He was also totally blind. And as was the seven-year-old, who stands before you today, 40-something years later, as Australia's Human Rights Commissioner. My responsibilities in Australia include public education and advice to our national government on whether its policies and laws conflict with Australia's human rights obligations. And I judge my success by the amount of notice our government takes of me. And halfway through my five-year term, I'm doing okay because they're still listening. But Uncle David's story is important for me and for you as members of NFB, because it demonstrates what all of us know from attending this convention and participating in NFB, the value of peer support and the value of seeing other blind people successfully living their lives. And it's why I'm proud and pleased to have been asked to speak at this convention, because peer support and peer learning from other blind people have played a major role in the things that I've achieved in my life. So thank you for this opportunity to talk with you today and to learn from you at this convention. I've found the convention an amazing experience. I've shared conversations with many talented and interesting blind people. I've enjoyed some excellent presentations. I've been blown away by the exhibition hall and impressed by the whole energy generated in this organisation. And this morning, after staying in thousands of hotels in my life, I washed my hair, knowing for sure for the first time that I was using shampoo. Because like many of you and William, thanks to Kurzweil and the NFB, I've gone totally mobile. Okay, so let's start with a quiz this morning. Who's seen the movie Finding Nemo? All right, three Finding Nemo questions. Easy questions. What's the name of Nemo's dad? Marlin, right. And what's the name of that fish that has a short-term memory problem worse than mine? Dory. And finally, who can tell me the name of the leading shark? Yeah, that's right. He's not a lawyer like me. His name is Bruce. Excellent. Now, I'm glad to see good US dollars spent in Australia making movies and publicising my country. Now, my speeches are always rated according to a set of principles. And today, it's the Bruce principles. B for brevity, because Dr. Mora has his finger on the switch that turns off my microphone after 15 minutes. R for relevance, because I want to talk about issues which Federationists will find of interest. U for usefulness, I hope to leave you with some learnings to take away. C for challenging, because I plan to challenge you in a number of areas. And E for entertaining, because I hope that the jokes are still clear in my weird Aussie accent. So, when you rate my speech at its conclusion, please applaud if I've achieved the Bruce principle. Finding Nemo is not just relevant because of its value as a source of quiz questions and a way for me to create quirky acronyms. It's also relevant because, apart from its value as entertainment for kids, it tells the story of a challenge and how it was overcome. A single parent dad, after facing the challenge of losing his wife and children, is bringing up his only son. His son, demonstrating the normal teenage trait of disobeying his dad's clear instructions, and I know I have an almost teenage daughter, is swept away by a current, and his dad devotes himself to finding the son against all odds. Now, as blind people, we face a range of similarly major challenges. Now, don't get up and walk out just yet. I don't mean all the schmaltzy stuff about how hard it must be to do anything or everything as a blind person. What I mean is the challenges we face to achieve equality and independence, to be neither heroes nor victims, but masters of our own destiny. And you guys are serious about it. You march for it. Now, much of this convention and the work of NFB relates to those challenges. There are people here with far more expertise than me to talk about them in detail, and you have been. But I want to touch on a few briefly from the perspective of a human rights expert visiting from another country. And I do so because, as Albert Einstein said, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing and expecting a different result. So, if we don't change the approaches we use, we'll continue to be beaten by these challenges. Let me illustrate some of these challenges with some stories from Australia, and I think they'll remind you of similar experiences here. One of the early resolutions in the history of Blind Citizens Australia, which is the NFB equivalent, related to the need for Commonwealth legislation making unlawful discrimination on the ground of disability. BCA members have also always argued for an equal place in the community and sought the tools to challenge less favourable treatment on the grounds of our blindness. I was involved in drafting that BCA policy, and I was lucky enough some 10 years later to be involved in drafting the legislation which put that policy into effect. A further decade or so later, I got even luckier. I was appointed commissioner and now administer that piece of legislation, and they pay me to do it into the bargain. The legislation in Australia is not perfect, and I'm sure that the same could be said of your ADA. Pleasingly, though, Australian courts haven't whittled away at our law, making saving legislation necessary. But I congratulate you for initiating that and having it moving through your legislature. However, we did learn a little from your experience, and our definition of disability doesn't require a person to prove that they are limited in a major life activity, before they can start demonstrating how they've been discriminated against. It always seems an irony to me that you have to prove that you can't do something in order to be allowed to argue that you should be allowed to do something else. On the other hand, I envy the clocks which you have running on the implementation of standards in various areas. We've been negotiating and waiting for similar standards for many, many years in Australia. But the legislation is one of the tools which has allowed BCA and its members and other people with disabilities to establish equality in a whole range of areas. They've been as diverse as education, public transport, access to premises, overhangs and footpath obstacles, roundabouts replacing traffic lights, and discrimination in employment. And one of the most well-known complaints lodged by a Blind Citizens Australia member was against the Sydney Organising Committee for the Olympic Games when they refused to make the Sydney Olympics website accessible. Now, the issue of whether your discrimination legislation covers cyberspace is a problem which, thankfully, we don't have in Australia. And the $20,000 damages award which the complainant received was certainly a wake-up call to the IT industry. Access to the internet is far from perfect, but it's much improved in Australia as a result of that case. I heard yesterday of your successes in this area, but I'm sure you still face some challenges here. Finding Nemo epitomises another challenge that we face, knowing what's going on in the movies when there's no audio description. Here in the US, whilst things are not perfect, you get much more access to audio description than we do in Australia. In Australia, it's less than 1% available. It's virtually non-existent. Now, our government, following encouragement from my commission, Blind Citizens Australia and others, is currently investigating this situation, and the DDA is being used to encourage change. But it would be helpful if you could encourage producers of movies here to ensure that the audio description they include in the US remains when the product goes overseas, because it seems when those products cross your borders, the audio description disappears. I'm not sure whether it's a new security or customs provision. Because of the size of your market, this can have a big impact throughout the world. And there's more about this on our Commission website at www.humanrights.gov.au. Last year, the Human Rights Commission launched a discussion paper called Time to Consider the Overlooked Consumers. And we call for more attention on access for people with disabilities in the design of consumer electronics and appliances. Design of such equipment is a major concern. Designers design environments that suit their own situations, and not much thought is given to those people that the product will exclude. Our paper researched access issues for blind people, and it looked at accessibility for a wide range of consumer electronics, including home entertainment systems and remotes, white goods and other appliances, home environment, portable devices, and personal care, health and fitness devices. Visual displays might be easy for some, but not for us. Quite often, just adding a dial would help. The paper recommends dialogues with industry, making access part of design awards, and grants and tax incentives for manufacturers willing to develop accessible products. The paper, again, is on our website. But again, this is a challenge we share. But because the US is such a large market, you can assist other countries by addressing this issue here. Your Rehabilitation Act provisions demonstrate that. And the presentation yesterday from GE was a very encouraging one. The next challenge that I'll touch on is the challenge of negative or odd assumptions through a guide dog story. Now, this is an only in Queensland story. Queensland is our northern and one of our hottest states, where speech and other things go just a little bit more slowly. Now, perhaps for context, I should call it an only in Texas story. But can I get away with that comment in Dallas? I'm not sure. I had met with some senior bank officials in Brisbane, the Queensland capital. And walking with my guide dog, I got into the elevator on the 30th floor at the same time as another person. The lift buttons weren't marked with raised letters or braille. So turning to this man, I said, "Could you press the button for ground floor, please?" And I got no response. Thinking that he may have a hearing impairment, I looked directly at him so he could read my lips and said a little more loudly, "Could you press ground, please?" Still no response. Puzzled, I reached over and tapped him on the shoulder and repeated my request. "Ah," he said, "are you talking to me? I thought you were asking the guide dog." Now, my guide dog is very good, but she hasn't learned to read lift buttons yet. I'm sure that many of you can relate to that experience. I'm forever amazed at how many people talk to my guide dog rather than to me. I've even had one person squat down and start explaining directions to the dog. We have a long way to go in public education. Now, just as Marlon couldn't live without his son Nemo, I couldn't have achieved what I have without Braille. As you know, 2009 is the 200th anniversary of Louis Braille's birth, and you're recognising it with a coin, and I want to strongly support that recognition. Louis Braille invented his writing system using his father's stitching awl when he was just 15 years old. What an achievement, particularly for a person of that age. All of us know well just how available Braille is around the world, on paper and electronically, and the huge significance that it's had. We strive for its greater availability because many of us couldn't achieve independence without it. Now, to prove that I'm a 21st century man, earlier this year, I Googled Braille. And the variety was itself a tribute to Louis Braille and the effect of his invention. It ranged from topics such as Braille Bug, the kids' Braille site, Braille music, learning Braille, Braille signs, Braille equipment and translation software. Just the sort of things that we would all expect. But there were also some more unusual ones. Braille business cards, Braille Without Borders, an organisation encouraging the use of Braille and the independence of people who are blind throughout the world. Braille Asteroid, where you can obtain horoscopes via a text message. And just to ensure that there would be no discrimination in the internet's largest single focus, porn for the blind. I didn't go to that site, okay? Let's ensure that 2009, as well as being a celebration of this invention, sees an expansion of the use and recognition of Braille. Now, let me conclude with some comments on the Convention on the Rights of People with Disabilities. I was a member of the Australian delegation during its drafting, and I'm confident that Australia will ratify the convention in the next few weeks. In fact, I'm a bit annoyed with our government because they should have done it while I was here in the US. But your founder, Dr. Tenbroke, led the way in his time to advance the right of people, blind people, to live in the world. And that's what the convention aspires to. NFB, and as William has explained, the World Blind Union, have been strong in their support of the convention development. We, as blind people in developed countries, understand the challenge involved in achieving and maintaining independence. But imagine the size of that task for the 650 million people with disabilities throughout the world. Think about blind people in other countries, described by Dr. Rowland, many of whom don't have jobs and homes, let alone the technology available in Australia and the United States to achieve independence. So I challenge you to continue to use a small part of the great energy of this organisation through the convention to share your learning and your success with blind people throughout the world, because the human rights which are set out in the convention should be available to everyone, everywhere, every day. urge your government to ratify the convention and support other blind people throughout the world to achieve its implementation. I encourage you to make this one of the big rocks in your jar. Thank you again for the chance to share your 68th convention. It's been a wonderful experience for me. If I've achieved my Bruce principles, then I've found my Nemo. If not, then throw me to the sharks. Thanks very much.